You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This episode of On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Brand Now, How to Stand Out in a Crowded, Distracted World. Many former On Brand guests are already raving about Brand Now. Jay Baer calls it the quintessential guide to modern branding. Stacey Grissom of BarkBox says Brand Now provides practical tools and a helpful framework for building a brand both online and off. Learn more, get special extras and additional resources at brandnowbook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Case Kenny. Case is an entrepreneur and writer living in Chicago. He is the founder of 216 Ventures LLC and Pursuit.com, a daily email focused on self-development content. He is the host of The New Mindset, Who Dis Podcast, an iTunes Top 50 podcast focused on real and relatable life advice. He sits on the Forbes Business Development Council, has been featured in Forbes, Entrepreneur, Inc., CBS, the Chicago Tribune, and speaks, consults, and writes regularly on all things personal and corporate branding, publishing, and social media growth strategies. Case, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me on.
So as someone that talks really on all levels of branding from personal to corporate, one thing that I feel in there kind of always is a great place to start, because I think it's the least understood, or at least the least accepted that it's an actual thing, and that is this kind of squishy topic of personal branding. It's so important and yet so easily missed. Can you talk a bit more about why that is?
Yeah. I mean, I have pretty strong feelings about personal branding. I think in this day and age where it's very easy to build a personal brand, you literally just have to hop on your social network of preference and you're off to the races. I think it's very easy to get caught up in your desire to, quote, create a personal brand. I think it's really important to be intentional with why you're doing these things. I could probably talk in circles about this, but I think that the gist of my take on personal branding is it's really relative to my experience. Like, I've been an entrepreneur for a long time. I've built media companies. I've worked at media companies. I've humbly been, quite successful in that realm. But I really didn't choose to build my personal brand until literally just the past 2 years. So I took 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years before that of being successful, getting experience before I decided to do that personal brand. And that was literally me just being very reactive to what I'm seeing, which is a lot of people building personal brands around nothing, around no substance, around no experience. And I'm a pretty positive guy, and that sounds awfully negative, but to me, if you're going to build a personal brand, it has to be built on something, especially considering now that, you know, the majority audiences, whether you're a large corporation or a company or a business, like, it's Gen Z and Gen Y people. And they have a nose, an eye, an ear for BS. And if you're building a personal brand just to have a personal brand and you're posting quotes and just, you know, the usual rhetoric and things like that, you're not going to connect. What connects with this day and age is consumer. Anyone who's online, who's a prospective customer, or it's just, you know, someone on social media, is relatability and experience. That's the biggest thing. And that's why I really chose to hold off on my personal brand until I had something to write home about, which is my experience, which was, you know, accolades and things like that. And to me, that's what's really enabled me to be successful. And then within there, obviously, I have a lot of understanding of what it takes to take that to the next level. But I think foundational to any personal brand is it has to be built on something. People aren't going to care. you're just putting your name out there, you have to build it on something and then from there provide value. But I'm very passionate about this idea that you have to be real, you have to be authentic, you have to build it on something that matters, which is your experience.
Well, and is that a step that is missing so much today, in that I love what you said about waiting until you have something to write home about, because it's almost this weird kind of flip of where we used to be, of it was hard to publish, to kind of find your own megaphone. And now with the availability of tools, we can do that, but we're rushing in before we have that articulated.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. I mean, with everyone has a microphone and anyone can do it, it's kind of diluted the value of personal brand sometimes, such that the average consumer sees a personal brand and like, looks like Joe Schmo, looks like the same old, same old. And that's kind of a sad reality. I mean, that's what happens when you reach, you know, mass consumption on social media. Things get watered down. People tend to care a little bit less. So I think you have to really focus on giving them a reason to care, which I think in this day and age is going to be some aspect of relatability. And that's why I really lean in. And I don't think people necessarily don't realize that. I think it's so easy to create a brand that sometimes people just fall into the cookie cutter style of personal branding, which doesn't necessarily reflect that experience. But I think if you could really just keep that in your mind and use that first, I think you're going to set yourself up for a lot more success.
So where else would you tell someone that is eager to establish a personal brand, where would you tell them to kind of get started with this?
Yeah, I mean, it's all about, obviously it's about choosing your channel, choosing what channel kind of really carries through your personality best, whether that's spoken like a podcast or something like that, whether that's video, whether that's something more static like social media. I think you got to know yourself and where you're really going to succeed. I think I do see a lot of young either entrepreneurs or companies or people that are trying to build a personal brand. They go wide instead of deep. And I'm a big proponent of really being smart and focusing on one area, one channel of distribution first, really honing in on that, and then considering if you want to scale. I see a lot of, you know, people building a personal brand. I think that's bare bones. Everyone should have a website. But then from there, it's, hey, follow me on YouTube, follow me on my podcast, follow me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitch, Musical.ly. It's like, it's insane. Like, people don't know where to follow you. And there's no way you're going to be able to create enough content of value and substance across all of them at once. So I'm a big proponent of just picking a channel. Like, for me, it's my Instagram at case.kenny, and then it's my podcast. It started with my Instagram, and then from there, people are like, wow, Case, like, you're a great writer. You really have some cool and relatable things to say. You should consider bringing that to life on a podcast. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, that's not a bad idea. I've always thought about that as a personal brand. So then I did it. But really, for me, it was, I'm going to start on Instagram because I think I can relate more there. I'd like doing quick videos, things like that, posting little writing and snippets that fit my style, short and to the point. And then from there, I scale from there. But I don't have a personal Facebook account. I just don't do that, because to me, I don't see myself being able to succeed there. I see myself succeeding on Instagram and podcasting for now. And I think that's really the way to do it. Just start somewhere, go deep there, and then let people tell you where else to scale to.
You know, that's really interesting advice. I think it's great advice. And I think that is maybe not what most out there are used to hearing, because I think we get kind of into this rut where we feel like we are supposed to be everywhere all the time. And yeah. And I think that last point too, of figuring, I forget how you said it, of figuring one thing out before you try to be everywhere all the time with everything.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that's spot on, and maybe it's a little bit contradictory to the usual advice, but I mean, I've learned that there's so many business experiences that have really taught me that. Like with Pursuit, for example, the daily email that I run, like the decision to go all in on email, it's kind of similar to the skim if you're familiar with that, but the decision to go all in on email was made because we were going so wide everywhere else. Facebook, Instagram, SEO. We were a blog previously, so we were just desperate for people to notice us, and we were posting here and there and everywhere. And the result was a lot of ups and downs, a lot of ups and downs with eyeballs, a lot of ups and downs with revenue. And it wasn't scalable because we were all over the place. So that's when I took a step back and was like, let's go all in somewhere and let's own that area. And that's when I decided to go all in an email. And there's a lot of great things about email, namely that you own your distribution. There's no algorithms or Facebook or Google aren't going to change their mind one day and you're kind of screwed. I decided to own that. But from a branding perspective, it's really cool now in that sometimes our tagline will be, all we do is email. That's it. Yeah, we have social and things like that, but we've always had that. And that's just to maintain a presence there. We have, 200,000 followers. We're not going to shut that down. It's just to amplify, but it's all about owning one area. And we're very vocal about that. And to me, that's what's enabled us to succeed over the past 2 years is that people know what we stand for and where we are. We're not trying hard to be anywhere else. We know what we're good at. We know where we resonate, and we're just going to stick with it. And that's always been my mentality towards anything branding is if, do one thing really well. And if there's an opportunity to scale beyond that, listen and ask and then do that. I wouldn't do it in the reverse order.
Yeah, I think that's really key. Doing one thing really well, listening and asking. I think, when we have heard this advice before, it's do this thing really well and then. But I like your listen and ask. That seems, I don't want to really kind of bore down into parsing words, but I think that's an important step too. I mean, where, do all of the things, do one thing. The one thing sounds like is different than than we typically hear, but we do occasionally hear it. But what about that interim step? How do you know? What does the listening and asking? Because I think that's kind of a growth point that we might not always see for our brands as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's absolutely essential. I'm chuckling a little bit because I see young entrepreneurs or even large brands go full bore to market with products that they've never even asked about. They've never asked the market. They've never asked their audience if they're interested in. Every single thing that I've ever done has been reactive to asking my audience for things. That's why I do a lot of polls. I do in the email. I'm always asking people, what do they want? And I always use that to then build brands. It was the same with the podcast. It was the same with brands that I've built in the past. I've done webinars and digital products and things like that. And I would never, ever waste my time creating a digital product unless I knew bare bones that there were at least 100 people in my network, in my distribution list that were interested in it. That way, one, I can launch and know I'll have sales and know I'll have, at least awareness. But two, I know I can scale it because you have a sample size. I mean, personal branding is about building an audience for sure. And it's about leveraging that for different things, for press and just social proof. But more so, building an audience is about building a focus group that you can then turn to time and time again to then build additional products and scale your existing ones. I mean, to me, that's 101, but I just see a lot of people not taking that step because either they're just very confident in their own head, or maybe it's them and their business partners or them and their network, and they're all just kind of going in a circle congratulating themselves on the idea. When in reality, you should take a step back, check your pride at the door for a couple of minutes and ask your audience what they want, if it's a good idea, whatever, however you word it, and then use that. I think that's the most powerful thing you can have. And it wasn't always available. I can throw up an Instagram story right now and in a couple hours on my personal account have 3,000 views, 500 answers. And that's so crazy powerful. So to not leverage something like that, even if you're smaller, I think is a mistake.
Well, and it reminds me of a stat that I cite frequently. About 76% of marketers think that they know what their customers want, but only 34% have bothered to ask. And that, to me, is a high crime in a day where it doesn't take a focus group. What you just described on Instagram, any of us can do on whatever network we've built up that audience.
Yeah, and I think it's crazy too. Some people are like, "Oh, well, no one cares. No one will give me feedback." I'm not a scientist. I don't have any research behind it. But people are very willing to answer your question. I'm just shocked by it. Sometimes I'll throw up a very technical like branding question or something in the email, and I'll get hundreds of responses. It's people are willing to help. You just have to ask them, and I think that's a powerful thing to realize.
Yeah, I agree, and definitely something that we could I think we could build upon better. You talk about email and podcasts, and these are two of my, obviously we're talking right now on a podcast. I also send a weekly email as well. And these channels are some of my favorites. And I think that sometimes podcasting's a little different. Podcasting gets a fair amount of attention, but email especially, I think we're quick to write off. And I think that that's a huge mistake. What have you found in the value of your email in terms of audience?
I mean, people are like, you know, to your point, like email's antiquated. That's old school. Like I just use it for spam. I don't think that's really the reality. I used to do, you know, a lot of research on it. People are leaning into their email. I think, to me at least, I think email is one of the most personal forms of communication. You know, it's literally your personal email address that you give out only to certain people and certain companies based on a desired value proposition from them. So I think at bare bones, it's personal. It's very personal. I think if you do it right, and you publish at the right cadence, people come to appreciate it. People come to expect it. And I think that's really big. But I think the biggest reason that I leaned all in on email is just the state of affairs with other publishing platforms, namely Google and namely the social platforms. When you're relying on folks like that to build your brand or to build your company, or if you're a publisher, to build your traffic and distribution, you're building your home on rented land and they could take it away at any point. I don't want to build on rented land. I want to build on land that I own, and that's email. No one can take that away. Yeah, people can unsubscribe, but there's no algorithm. There's no change that's going to affect my ability to communicate with them if they're still interested. Social, though, changes to a Facebook newsfeed algorithm, changes to the Instagram algorithm, changes to SEO preferences for Google. Like, that could be devastating. And you've seen so many digital publishing companies literally go out of business because they built their audiences there. And I kind of, not that I'm some kind of prophet, but I kind of saw that coming. And that's why I made this change to email for Pursuit. And I've never looked back because, one, I own it. And two, it's personal. People get my email and they can respond immediately to me. I always respond back, or I have my team respond back. And that's a very personal thing. If you're reading an article on Forbes, for example, it would take multiple steps to get in contact with the author, and more than like maybe they won't respond. But for email, it's one click, reply, respond. And then for me, I built my brand on just authentic responses and openness and transparency, and we respond. And to me, like that's everything, and I really value that.
So where does someone, if they're listening to this and thinking, oh my God, we're not doing anything with email, or it's a dusty old strategy that we haven't been focusing on recently well enough, where would you tell someone to start in either getting started with email or reactivating kind of a tired plan?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily suggest, you know, reopening the email floodgates for your brand or your company unless you have a reason to do it. I mean, I think email has a place in every company, whether you're a Fortune 500 CPG company, whether you're an online entrepreneur selling an e-course, or whether you're, you know, a podcaster. I think you should have email. I mean, I think the biggest thing if you're doing email is to set an expectation for when and why you're emailing people. I'm big on setting expectations when it comes to like frequency and cadence of emailing them. We're daily emails, so people know what they're going to get. But I set that expectation up front that when someone opted in, they get a pretty thorough welcome email from me that sets the expectation, not, hey, I'm Case, I'm going to send you an email every so often, and it might be about this, it might be about that. Like, people aren't apt to drive any loyalty for you. They're certainly not going to evangelize your brand for you. But if you set the expectation that, hey, my name's Case, I'm going to email you Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, and I'm going to talk about this, this, and this, and here's why it's going to help you. Like, that's how I've built a loyal following. I mean, we send an email every morning out to, at this point, it's like 137,000 people. And people don't unsubscribe. People expect that email, and there's a lot of loyalty there. So I think my advice, there's lots of different platforms you can use. There's lots of different styles. You could do automation and things like that if you really want to be a little bit hands-off. But the biggest thing is to set the expectation of why you're emailing someone and how often you're going to email them. If you fall outside of that, people start to either get annoyed, which is never a good thing. You never want to get marked as spam. Or two, they just don't care. And I don't want you to waste your time emailing someone if they don't care. So you have to tell them why they should care. And obviously, some of that goes back to how got them to opt in the first place. But I think the biggest thing is just setting that expectation up front.
That is, that makes me think of the other channel that you have kind of leaned into as well on the podcasting front of setting expectations there. So with kind of a different context, which is how I think we think of podcasting, it's sort of compared to email, which is a channel we may have forgotten about, it is sort of surging. So what is the benefit if, you know, and there's at least some similarity, some overlap with the types of things we do in email, of social media and other digital platforms. But with podcasting, all of a sudden, you've got brands thinking about using an audio show. So where, that's very different than anything else. What advice do you have for brands thinking about podcasting?
Yeah, I mean, one, you're spot on. There's a huge surge in interest in podcasting and the amount of content being created for podcasting. It's like we're approaching the golden era of podcasting. I almost wish I had got into it, 5-6 years ago. But there's certainly a lot of truth there. I mean, I think podcasting to me is lean forward. Like content creators, they create this content, and as a consumer, you're lean forward towards it. Like you're engaged, you're listening, and the ROI for brands for podcasting is off the charts. I don't have stats really available to prove that, but when I put brands in my email, when I put brands in my podcast, the ROI pops. And I think it's principally down to the fact that, the way that I've built an audience on my podcast was built on my personal brand. So brands working in podcasts are essentially getting firsthand testimonials. It's not sponsorships. It's not things like that. Brands are able to capitalize on personal testimonials because as a content creator for a podcast, you're intentionally personal. You're intentionally authentic, and it's more conversational. And that's different than typical publishing, which is by the book. It could be very cookie cutter, and there's not a whole lot of personality driven elements to it. Typically, I'm talking about typical blogging and content marketing and things like that. But podcasting, there's just you're able to do so many things with it. And the reason that I leaned in on it was like, hey, I'm a writer. I write a lot. I have a large audience. But like, people don't truly know what I'm like. Let the Case Kenny personality shine through to an extent. And I did that on a podcast, and it's just really taken off. And brands want to associate themselves with cool people. They want ROI. And I think podcasting allows you to really do that. And yeah, I mean, to your point, everyone listens to podcasts now. Everyone's getting into podcasts. It's going to be really interesting to see what different platforms do, iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, things like that, to really capitalize on this. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me because podcasting is more personal relative to other publishing mechanisms. So I'm very passionate about it. I've been podcasting for a while on another podcast, but this is my personal one that I've really leaned in on, and only 6 months in, and it's in the iTunes top 100, hundreds of thousands of downloads a month. I have over 1,000 5-star reviews, which is just crazy, and that's because people lean towards that personal nature, and it really lends itself to it.
Absolutely. And whether you're talking about personality, another kind of word we hear often that it reminds me of is authenticity. And these are kind of things that we hear about being in demand, but how do you deliver personality, authenticity, and coming full circle back to where we started in terms of you saying that everything is dependent on channel. I think that's why podcasting is a powerful channel at this moment.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And I think, yeah, it lends itself to everything. It's literally perfect. And it's inherently mobile as well, right? People are listening on iTunes, people are listening on Spotify, and you can leverage your existing social audience one click and they're on that device, right? So it's easy. And that's the biggest thing, to create less steps, less friction for people to discover you, to listen. It's perfect.
Well, it is the medium of the moment and one we're enjoying talking about right now on this very podcast, which it's hard to believe that we are at our time for our interview as well. As we wrap up, Case, I always ask guests for a brand that has made them smile recently.
Made me smile. Yeah, I think the answer, and I thought about this before because you gave me a heads up, is RX Bar. Are you familiar with RX Bar?
Yes. Cool. I wrote about them in my book. I love RX Bar.
I love RX Bar. So they're actually a client of mine. And beyond that preference, I swear I'm not biased. I love their branding. And actually, I'm looking at my phone right now because I pulled it up. And like, their branding is so cheeky and clever. It makes me smile as a marketer. Like, one of their big billboard ads literally says, "This is a really, really big poster." A lot of their billboards say no BS. Like, I love that. Like, I love brands that don't try to overcomplicate things, that don't try to be overly empathetic when you don't have to. Like, no one cares about your corporate stance on certain social issues. Like, yeah, it's important, but that's not your marketing. That's not necessarily what you stand for. Tell us what you do, why it's a good product, and just respect us as humans. And that's why I like RX. They're just cheeky. They're funny. They're clever. It's very minimalist. Like, that kind of stuff makes me smile. They're not very funny necessarily, but as a marketer, that puts a smile on my face because it's real and it does well. They're a huge brand. They got acquired by Kellogg's. Like, they're doing great things. So yeah, I'd say RX Bar for sure.
I love it. And I love their packaging as well. Yeah. Just
super simple. I love it.
Absolutely. Where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, I think I point everyone to my Instagram. It's the easiest for me. It's just Instagram. It's at case.kenny. It's got all my links there, so you can check that out. Or pursuit.com, P-R-S-U-I-T.com, if you want the email.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Case, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Cool. Thank you, Nick. I appreciate it. This was a good chat.
And a reminder, if you like something that you heard on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. On Brand is a production of Brand Driven Digital, helping complex organizations simplify their branding and marketing to unlock growth. More, including the links we discussed on this episode, at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.